The Katra Podcast, Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Katatra AI. Welcome, curious minds, to the deep dive. Today we are undertaking a really fascinating mission. We're peeling back the layers of German history and literature. And our guide for this is Nicholas Boyle's, well, frankly, monumental intellectual history of the subject.
Yeah, it's quite the undertaking. And if you, the listener, have ever picked up a book by a major German author, I think Thomas Mann, Hermann Hesse, maybe even Bertolt Brecht, you probably notice something distinct. The literature often feels, almost always philosophical, doesn't it? Deeply serious.
Definitely.
And it seems profoundly obsessed with this question of identity. Who are we? What's the ideal way to live?
It's true. It's rarely what you'd call a fun beach read. And the central puzzle we're diving into today is exactly why. Why does German literature carry such, well, immense existential weight?
So our mission here is to unpack Boyle's core argument, which is essentially that the centuries-long absence of a unified, stable German nation-state that forced literature and culture to become the primary substitute for politics.
Exactly. Creating this kind of spiritual home where the nation could quite literally imagine itself into existence.
Wow.
It completely flips the script on how we usually view books, right? Literature wasn't just, you know, reflecting the nation.
It was building it.
Precisely. It was the mechanism designed to build it.
I love that framing. It really turns the study of literature into urgent intellectual history. Okay, so let's talk about the scholar guiding us through this, Nicholas Boyle. When you're dealing with a topic this huge, covering, what, five centuries, you definitely need an expert with some serious authority. Oh, Boyle certainly has it. He's the Emeritus Schroeder Professor of German at the University of Cambridge. That position alone places him right at the very top tier of German studies globally. But his authority isn't just about the title, you know? What truly sets him apart, I think, is his life's work.
Right.
He wrote this absolutely monumental, multi-volume biography of Johann Wolfgang von Goethe.
Goethe, right. The giant, the sort of father figure of modern German literature.
The very one. And to dedicate a lifetime to understanding that figure's output and influence? Well, it means Boyle has this incredibly comprehensive view of German intellectual life. Few others possess that kind of scope.
And what's really crucial for us, for you listening, is that he uses this expertise not just to, like, list books and dates. He crafts a relentless analytical argument. He's connecting history, philosophy, poetry in a way that gives you the complete scaffolding needed to really understand the German emotional and political landscape.
Exactly right. He is thesis-driven. He cuts through this immense volume of literary history to present a really clear and, I'd say, provocative case for what makes the German tradition unique.
So not an encyclopedia.
No, not at all. He's giving us something much more like a theory of everything, German literature edition.
Okay, let's unpack that single theory then, because this is the biggest idea, the one thing you really need to hold on to throughout this. It's about the defining condition of German letters.
It is. And that condition is the political vacuum. Simple as that, almost. While England had, you know, a powerful monarchy, Parliament, France had Paris, a strong centralized state defining national identity, German-speaking lands. For centuries, they remained just this fragmented patchwork, hundreds of principalities, the Holy Roman Empire. Messy.
Yeah, no real center.
No single capital, no strong king, no unified political purpose. It just wasn't there.
Okay, so if the politics are perpetually fragmented, identity has to come from somewhere else.
Right, precisely. And Boyle argues that literature, language, culture that became the substitute for the nation, they became the shared imagined ground, the spiritual home, as he puts it.
Ah, the spiritual home.
Yeah, where dispersed people can still feel part of some greater whole. And this is why German works are often so relentlessly philosophical. They weren't reflecting a successful political reality because there wasn't one. They were trying to invent a superior spiritual and moral reality instead.
Inventing it through words.
Through words, through ideas. And Boyle's book takes us chronologically through this invention process. Starts with the Reformation. Luther flows right through the Enlightenment, Romanticism, and then into the, well, the political catastrophes of the 20th century. Literature is treated as this vital, functional, absolutely central force in the very making of a nation.
Okay, let's jump into that deep history. Starting with the foundation, which Boyle anchors around, what, 1500 to 1750. And you really can't talk about the start of German cultural identity without talking about Martin Luther.
Absolutely foundational.
The key point Boyle makes here is that Luther's 1522 translation of the New Testament, it wasn't just revolutionary for religion, it was revolutionary for political culture, too. by translating the text into this vibrant but also standardized version of High German.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of accidentally created this essential medium, a language that could be read and understood across hundreds of these disparate little states.
Suddenly there was a shared tongue.
Yeah. The first and maybe the most enduring bond of a purely cultural nation.
It's an incredible insight, isn't it?
Mm.
A religious document created the first unifying territory, a linguistic one.
Mm.
And that bond was then tested during the Enlightenment, the Aufklärung, starting around 1750. Since they still lacked a proper political republic, the intellectuals basically created a republic of letters.
A republic of letters. I like that.
Yeah. And what's fascinating here is the social side of it. You see the emergence of the public sphere.
Yeah.
Coffee houses, reading societies, journals.
Places to talk.
Exactly. Intellectual life flourishing outside the court or the church.
Mm-hmm.
And playwrights like Gotthold Ephraim Lessing.
Yeah.
He used the theater, famously in Nathan the Wise, to champion moral reason, public debate, religious tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
So literature became this vital public forum for discussing national moral questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was no parliament or centralized political machine to do it.
Right. Literature had to do the job. But that civic debate phase, it kind of hit a wall, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
When the French Revolution happened and then Napoleon rose, it just showed the political, the military weakness of these fragmented German states.
Little impotence.
Yeah. So they essentially retreated. And here's where, for me, it gets really interesting. The golden age of Weimar classicism, Goethe and Schiller, they basically devised an aesthetic solution to a political failure.
That's a great way to put it.
And the central concept they championed was Bildung.
Bildung.
Which translates roughly to harmonious self-cultivation, right?
That's the idea.
They essentially argued, okay, since the state, the external world, is currently incapable of being perfected, the individual must be perfected first.
Mm.
Art, literature, philosophy.
It's almost the kind of spiritual form of political procrastination.
Huh. Maybe.
They genuinely believed that by focusing intensely on cultivating moral and aesthetic character, you know, as chronicled in Goethe's classic Bildungsroman, Wilhelm Meister's Apprenticeship, they were creating the ideal, ethically aware citizen, someone who could eventually form the ideal state.
It's a beautifully utopian idea, isn't it? But you can see how it's rooted in a kind of political defeat. You focus inward because the outside world is just too frustrating, too fragmented.
And that idealistic turn inward.
Hmm.
Well, it had major consequences down the line. When political failure mounted again, especially after Napoleon just dismantled the old Holy Roman Empire, the internal focus became the dominant movement of Romanticism, known as Innerlichkeit, inwardness.
Innerlichkeit, okay.
If unity was unattainable externally, then the nation had to be sought in the inner world, you know, in emotion, dreams, myths, the subconscious. And this preference for spiritual internal freedom over active political engagement, it became deeply entrenched in the German psyche.
And that inwardness, that Innerlichkeit, that later provided the kind of bleak, anxious material for figures like Franz Kafka, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Kafka captured that sheer alienation, the incomprehensible bureaucracy of the modern, powerful German state once it finally arrived. Think of the trial.
Yeah.
The individual just crushed by an invisible, arbitrary external power. That deep-seated anxiety has roots back in this earlier turn inward.
So that internal-external conflict, it leads us to the ultimate crisis.
Right.
And the post-war task. After the utter devastation of 1945, the Zero Hour, they called it literature, suddenly had this totally new, desperate mission.
A completely different role.
The old project of building a spiritual nation, that was gone. It was replaced by the central, unavoidable mission of Vergangenheitsbewältigung.
That's a mouthful.
It is. It's a complicated word. It literally means something like the struggle to come to terms with the past.
Specifically, the Nazi past.
Yes. The moral catastrophe of the Nazi era. There was no avoiding it.
And this is where the writer became the nation's necessary conscience. It was almost demanded of them. Writers like Gudergrass, you know, in his incredibly provocative novel, The Tin Drum, or Heinrich Böll, they used their work to force a confrontation with history. They specifically challenged this widespread desire among many Germans to just move on.
Forget about it.
Yeah, to fall into what Boyle calls a conspiracy of silence.
Wow. A conspiracy of silence.
And so this act of forcing accountability through art, it was a functional, absolutely vital role for literature in the democratic rebirth of Germany. It proved that culture was still doing the heavy lifting of nation building, just in a very different, much darker way.
Okay. So if we try to synthesize this whole multi-century journey, What are the main takeaways, the key messages that define this German literary tradition for someone listening?
Right. I think we can boil it down to maybe four main points. First, literature as the imagined community. This is central. It serves as the essential social glue, the cultural identity, precisely because political unity was absent for so long.
So the books themselves are political documents in a way.
Fundamentally, even when they don't seem to be about politics.
Okay, what's second?
Second, the ideal of Bildung. This deep-seated, really persistent belief that personal development, cultivating your moral and aesthetic sensibilities, is the necessary foundation for all societal progress.
They truly believed you couldn't fix the world until you fixed yourself.
Pretty much sums it up. It's a powerful idea.
Third,
and this explains why these books often feel so intense, is the symbiotic relationship with philosophy. German literature treats literary works as vehicles for serious philosophical inquiry. They've just never really been separate enterprises in the German tradition.
Ah, okay.
You almost need to understand the big questions posed by, say, Kant or Hegel to fully appreciate the dramatic tension in a Schiller play or a Thomas Mann novel.
So if I pick up a classic German novel, I shouldn't just treat it like entertainment. I should expect it to be maybe a massive philosophical textbook, but in disguise.
That's actually not a bad way to think about it. It definitely explains the complexity.
Okay. And the last one?
And finally, the post-war task of Vergangenheitsbewältigung. That role really cemented the writer as the indispensable, often quite painful, conscience of the nation, constantly checking its moral compass against historical truth. A heavy burden.
No kidding. It's clear Boyle's arguments are often really concise and powerful, even when dealing with huge spans of time. Let's maybe share a few of his core ideas, paraphrased, of course, that really capture the book's essence.
Good idea. The first one that stands out is, where a political nation-state was absent, the German language became the principal territory for identity.
Simple, elegant. Culture drew the map where politics couldn't.
Exactly. Then, reflecting that seriousness we talked about, he basically states that German literature and German philosophy had never been separate enterprises.
Which explains why German authors are often treated almost like prophets or moral guides, not just storytellers.
Mm-hmm. And his third crucial argument, reflecting that post-war necessity, is something like, the writer's duty after 1945 was to excavate the ruins of a moral catastrophe and challenge collective amnesia.
Excavate the ruins, powerful imagery.
It perfectly captures that immense, almost existential responsibility the literary community took on after the war.
So this whole analysis, it really provides some profound real-life insights for us today, doesn't it? Regardless of where we live. The most compelling application for me, I think, is maybe adopting that philosophy of Bildung in our own lives.
Absolutely. I think that's a key takeaway. Bildung encourages us to view deep engagement with art, literature, genuine learning, not as optional hobbies, you know, or just tools for career advancement.
Right.
But as essential practices for holistic character development. Mm. It's about cultivating the self to become a more ethically aware, more complete human being, which is foundational to being a good citizen, too.
That's actually quite a radical shift in perspective for many of us, I think. It changes the goal of reading from just, say, pleasure or information to actual formation, personal formation.
Well put. And we can also learn from the functional model of Vergangenheitsbewältigung. Boyle shows how art and literature can have this vital, functional role in any society that's grappling with historical trauma.
Like colonialism or civil war.
Systemic injustice, exactly.
Yeah.
The German model suggests that artistic confrontation isn't just some historical footnote. It can be essential for accountability, for healing.
Facing the past through art, not just policy papers.
Right. It plays a unique role.
You know, I think the final, maybe surprising takeaway for me is just the sheer enduring power of culture over political structures. For centuries, this fragile literary bond forged by Luther, refined by Goethe, it was basically the only thing holding German speakers together culturally. That's incredible staying power.
It really is. Foundational power.
But that makes me wonder, and this is maybe the provocative question based on Boyle's analysis. Now that Germany is a unified, stable nation state with a strong political identity, has its literature lost that urgent nation-building purpose that defined it for so many centuries?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Has the literature become less essential? Or is it maybe still searching for a new definition of the German soul?
It's the ultimate open question, really. What Boyle ultimately gives us is this incredibly compelling deep dive into the German soul for lack of a better term. He shows that the literature's unique character, its philosophical depth, its inwardness, its intense self-scrutiny, it's not an accident.
It's a product of its history.
It's the direct, logical product of a very peculiar and profound history. And it proves, I think, that literature is never just stories. It's about the fundamental ongoing way a people comes to understand itself and to find its place in the world.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.